The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Hello, Giants fans, and welcome to your Valentine's Views podcast for Monday, October 31st. Happy Halloween for all of you. If you've got little folks out there, hopefully you guys have fun. Hopefully you all stay safe out there as you enjoy the day. All right. Also, you know, please remember to subscribe to Big Blue View Radio wherever you listen to podcasts, or like, share, and subscribe if you're watching us on YouTube. All right, Ed Valentine of Big Blue View here with Tony Del Genio, as always on Monday morning, as we look back at the Giants game on Sunday. This one, a 27-13 loss to the Seattle Seahawks. Tony, how you doing this morning?
I'm doing just fine, Ed. How about you?
I'm good. You know, Sunday was a disappointing ending for the New York Giants. But when I looked at that game, you have to look at what the Giants did through seven games, I think, Tony. And it's just, I mean, it was wonderful to watch through seven games, but you're just not going to win every single game by coming from behind in the fourth quarter. You're not going to win every single one-score game in the NFL. That's just not sustainable. It's just not going to happen every week, especially as you start to play better teams on the road. It's difficult to win, and you can't count on always being the team that gets things right and the other team making mistakes, especially as you step up in competition, which the Giants played a good team on Sunday.
That's right. Yes. Seattle is a better team, I think, than most people are giving them credit for. They're hot right now. I think this is their third win in a row. They're, if I remember correctly, the highest scoring team in the NFC, which I think many people don't realize. They've scored more points than Philadelphia, for example. And people think Philadelphia has this tremendous offense, which they seem to do. But Seattle's actually, I think, scored more points than Philadelphia has so far, although they may have a game in hand on Philadelphia. Nonetheless, you know, they're right up there, and their defense is getting better. Their defense, I think, was terrible to start the season, but it's getting better. And maybe, you know, that's to be expected. I believe they were changing from the old cover three that Pete Carroll ran for many, many years in Seattle, the Legion of Boom. And they're switching over, I believe, to more zone defense, more too high safety, although I don't know how much of it they played yesterday. But they're getting better at the defense that they're playing. And I thought that the Giants actually played pretty poorly yesterday. And still, you had a game that was 13-13 with 11 minutes to go. And so I take that as a still a sign for encouragement. As you say, you just can't win all of those close games at the end.
Absolutely. I mean, this game played out the same way as almost every other Giants game this year. It was a one score or a tie game into the fourth quarter, into the last 10 or 11 minutes. And it's just that this time it was the Giants who made the mistakes. It was Richie James with the fumbled punt that cost the Giants points, two fumbled punts, in fact, that ended up costing them 10 points. It was the Giants who had a defensive breakdown with Adoree Jackson getting burned by Tyler Lockett. It was the Giants offense this time, instead of being able to answer Seattle going three and out in the fourth quarter, when the Giants needed a drive to get points. And for me, it just, the way the game played out, the Giants have done a lot of wonderful things in the first half. But behind all of that, I think that we've known that there are limitations. There's a pretty narrow path to victory for the Giants based on some of their weaknesses, the lack of big-time playmaking from the wide receivers and from the tight ends. If they don't get the big play from Saquon Barkley, then they have to get it from Daniel Jones' legs. And Seattle yesterday did a great job defending the quarterback run. Mm-hmm. And when teams defend the quarterback run, that takes a huge weapon away from the Giants' offense. And I think what we saw was a game simply where the limitations of the way the Giants have to play were pretty much exposed.
Yeah, and I think people forget what a good head coach Pete Carroll is. I mean, he gained this reputation as a great coach for the better part of a decade, and then as they kind of stumbled the last few years, all of a sudden people's view of him, I think, changed, and maybe it changed with that Super Bowl when he didn't make them call Marshawn Lynch to go in for the clinching touchdown and decided to have Russell Wilson pass instead. And all of a sudden, I think people started thinking he was a jerk, and he was slow to adapt his defense to the way things are now in the NFL. But overall, this guy is a very good coach, and Seattle's a well-coached team, and I think that's maybe one of the things that we've overlooked is that the Giants have played a couple of teams that I think are not all that well-coached, and they've taken advantage of them to win the coaching battle. I thought yesterday they didn't win the coaching battle, and as you say, the Giants are so undermanned, especially in the receiving core. Okay, you've got a 13-13 game in the fourth quarter, and Daniel Jones is looking at receivers like Marcus Johnson to throw to and Darius Slayton, who had a very good game yesterday. He had five receptions. But who's there for Daniel Jones to pass to? Whereas Geno Smith, who's having a great year, and he played really well again yesterday, and I thought he was a big part of the reason the Giants lost, actually. I thought the Giants had him dead to rights a couple of times, and he escaped, and he had good passes when he needed to. But still, he's got Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf out there, and Daniel Jones doesn't have anything like that among the wide receivers, and he doesn't even have his top tight end.
No, he's throwing the ball to Tanner Hudson yesterday, mm-hmm. So who actually did a nice enough job, but he's still Tanner Hudson, and he's not going to do anything dynamic. Like I said, we've seen it, and you're absolutely right when it comes to coaching. It's not that the Giants got out-coached yesterday. I didn't think they got out-coached. It's just that Seattle didn't offer the Giants the opportunities by turning down points and, making some questionable fourth down decisions. They didn't offer the Giants added opportunities based on some of the decisions that they made. And that is in some ways what the Giants have depended on so far this year, is opponents to make mistakes, physical mistakes on the field, maybe some decisions that backfired, and they've taken advantage of those. And I think for me, it's a reminder for Giants fans that as wonderful as this start is, this is a Giants team that has a long way to go before you can look at it and say, this is a championship caliber roster. They're not winning with smoke and mirrors at this point, but but their path to victory, the way they have to win games, it's a narrow path. And when it gets blocked, the Giants don't have a lot of other options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Brian Daboll says every single week in his pressers, we've got a long way to go. Yeah, every week I hear him say, we've got a long way to go. We've got a long way to go. Every time someone tries to get him to get excited about what the team has done, he always says, we've got a long way to go. And it's true. The Giants are a roster that should not have had a 6-1 record going into the game yesterday. And 6-2 is a little bit more realistic, but I would even say at 6-2, you wouldn't look at the Giants roster and say that team should be 6-2. So they've gotten great coaching. They've gotten some breaks and some good plays at the right time. And yesterday they didn't get those. And actually they were lucky it wasn't worse, because Tyler Lockett dropped a touchdown pass early in the game for sure. And then he had that fumble that Adoree Jackson caused, to be honest. But if it were not for that, the Giants wouldn't have had a touchdown in the game.
No, it was a 2-yard scoring drive by the Giants.
Yeah, yeah.
Awesome offense, 2-yard scoring drive, which the highlight of that whole thing was seeing Nick Gates on the field and seeing Nick Gates mm-hmm. make a play. It's kind of an aside to our conversation, Tony, but I've written it big, Blue View, and I will continue to say this. For me, he's not going to win the award, but Nick Gates is the NFL Comeback Player of the Year. I don't care about statistics. I don't care about any of it. He's the Comeback Player of the Year in my mind.
Oh, yeah. It's so exciting to see him out there. And I didn't notice him at first on that play that the Giants scored on. First thing I noticed, actually, I was trying to figure out who was throwing the blocks, and I saw number 77, and I said, who's 77? And seven, I had to mm-hmm. look it up, and 77 is Jack Anderson, who the Giants got in the offseason. I had forgotten really that they had even gotten him. And then all of a sudden I saw the replay and they're showing number 65 blocking. I said, oh my God, Nick Gates is in there.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome to see him make a big block and to play like Nick Gates, to play with that sort of all out aggression. That was a lot of fun. But Tony, I think we need to talk about it, and we've kind of touched on it. The Giants lost on Sunday, and a couple of the reporters tried to get Brian Daboll to take a big picture look at the Giants at the bye, at the halfway point. I mean, let's be realistic. Sunday was a loss. Sunday exposed that there are limitations, I think, to what the Giants are capable of right now with the roster that they have. But 6-2 is phenomenal at this point in the season. 6-2 absolutely makes them a team that has, I mean, it's not a guarantee, and I don't care what all of these prediction services say, you know, 80-something percent chance of making the playoffs and all of that. But they're absolutely a team that right now should be thinking, we can make the playoffs. We could get to 10 or 11 wins. And so 6-2, you know, nobody saw it coming. And it's a phenomenal first half of the season for this Giants team.
Absolutely. And, you know, you look at some of the teams they've beaten. Tennessee has only lost one other game after losing to the Giants in the opening game of the season. Baltimore, if I remember correctly, is leading their division. Okay, and you know, nobody says that either team is a fraud right now. And while Green Bay has been having their problems, still that was a great win against Green Bay, and you know, Green Bay hung tough against Buffalo last night. They're not beating the worst teams in the league necessarily. Even Chicago, who they beat, is playing better ball now, and even Carolina. If DJ Moore doesn't take off his helmet, Carolina, I think, is leading the NFC South this morning.
It's Brian Daboll says it all the time. It's hard to win games in the NFL.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the team's record is coming into a game or leaving a game. It's hard to win games. You have to do a lot of things right. And you know, we've seen it for years. Tony, you've seen it. I've seen it. It doesn't matter if one team is, you know, 10-2 and the other team is 3-7, the game is likely to come down to 5 or 6 plays.
Yeah.
I mean, yesterday came down in a lot of ways. It came down to Richie James fumbling 2 punts that cost the Giants 10 points. It came down to a play that nobody thinks too much about, but Daniel Jones missing Lawrence Cager on a deep ball, I think, in the first quarter, that I don't know if it would have gone for a touchdown, but it would have changed momentum. It would have changed field position. It would have put the Giants in scoring position. And probably a couple of other plays. There was a 42-yard punt return by Richie James that set the Giants up at the Seattle 35 with a very, very questionable blindside block. I don't know how you get a blindside block out of a double team when the blindside block happened because one of the blocks happened to turn the guy around.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's a blindside block when it's part of a double team.
Yeah.
But
it was a terrible
block. But that cost the Giants, what, 50 yards of field position, mm-hmm. and took them out of what was automatically scoring position. Mm-hmm. So the game comes down to, you know, to a few things. And no matter what the records are, the Giants have had those things go their way so far. And Sunday they didn't, but 6-2 is still 6-2. And it's, for me, it's a good harbinger for the second half of the season, but it also established what I think is more important. I think it's established that this team has a good coaching staff, that it has a good front office, that it has a path out of this darkness they've been in for the last however many years, and that the future looks bright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, they had a really tough task, I thought, this Sunday with, you know, having come, this is their third road trip in 4 weeks, including an 8-hour trip in one direction, time zone wise, and then a 6-hour trip in another direction, time zone wise. They're playing in the rain yesterday. They're playing in front of a hostile crowd in a stadium that's known for its ability to disrupt opposing offenses with the noise they make. And I think you saw that yesterday while the Giants were on offense. I thought Tyree Phillips in particular was having a tough time with things over there at right tackle yesterday. And, you know, they still managed to play well under pretty adverse conditions. And they came up against a good opponent that mostly played well yesterday, and a team that's well coached, and they were still in the game until the end, even with 5 minutes to go. Really, you know, they could have tied the game up, and it just didn't go right for them in those last 5 minutes. So I'll take that. Although when you think about the kinds of expectations that most of us came into the season with, I would have been, I think I predicted the Giants were going to win 7 games this year. Well, we're still not even halfway through the schedule quite. And they've already got 6. So you know, what do I have to be disappointed about? And if they can win a few more, get to 10, wind up 10-7, I'd be happy as a clam.
There you go.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Gary Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Tony, real quickly, we are live streaming on YouTube, and we have a couple of folks who are asking us if Daniel Jones looked slow on Sunday. I'm going to ask you for your opinion on that before I give my answer. Just your thoughts on whether he looked slow yesterday when he was running some of the read option stuff and moving around in the pocket.
So I don't think he didn't look physically slow. I think that he was rolling out and looking downfield and wasn't seeing them bite on things that the defense bite on things maybe that they usually bite on, and they were perhaps taking away things that had been open in previous games and without, you know, without seeing the whole field the way you can, let's say, in all 22 film. I don't know whether that was really true or not, but it looked to me just as if he didn't see the options that he had before, that somehow they were keeping him from running the ball himself, and he didn't necessarily see a good option downfield for him to take. So, yeah, I don't know if that's correct or not, but that was my impression.
I had the same thought that you had, Tony. I didn't see anything physically wrong with Daniel Jones. I didn't see any physical issue with an ankle or a knee or him not moving well. What I saw was a Seattle team, and Jones even talked about this after the game, a Seattle team that played the quarterback run really well, a Seattle team that looked at the film and understood how many times Daniel Jones has made that play fake and rolled out this season and had no defenders in sight. When he tried that on Sunday, there was an edge guy in his face. When he tried the zone read stuff on Sunday and came around the corner, there wasn't green grass for him to run to. There were two or three Seattle defenders forcing him to get down. So I didn't see slow. I just saw better defense from Seattle.
Yeah, and one of the things I think we have to remember, right, is that the Giants have not won any of their games by overpowering, dominating the opposition. Not a single one. I mean, they've won six games. Not once can you say that they really dominated the game. You know, maybe the Chicago game, they did a little bit, but even that one, not all that much. And now teams have eight games worth of film to look at. And so they're seeing what the Dable Kafka offense is doing. I mean, they're seeing what Wink's defense is doing, but I don't know that Wink is doing anything different qualitatively than what he's done for years. So people probably know what to expect from Wink on defense. It's just that he fools you by not letting you be able to figure out which guy is going to come on the rush. So you know, McKinney got a clean path to Geno Smith yesterday on one of those plays where he manages to spring a guy completely loose, even though the team knows that some kind of a blitz is coming. But on offense, I think people are starting to see the game plan, and you didn't even have to go through their entire season. You just had to look at last week's Jacksonville game to see how the Giants were killing Jacksonville on what Daniel Jones was doing, and they came up with a way to cut that off on defense. And that's something then that Dable and Kafka are going to have to think about, I think, over the bye, is okay, now the teams are kind of getting wise to what we're doing. How do we do new stuff off that and start showing more of that as eye candy and then going in a different direction? It still comes down to me with, you can try to do something different, but you still have to have the personnel to get it done with.
Well, that's where I was going to go next, Tony, because it leads us into the next topic that I want to talk about, and that's the trade deadline. This very narrow path that I've been talking about has largely been because of, I think, the personnel that the Giants have, and not to mention some of the injuries that they've suffered recently in the offensive line. There are certain players the Giants have who can be playmakers, and those happen to be Daniel Jones, Saquon Barkley, and sometimes Darius Slayton. And there are other things they try to do at this point. Wandale Robinson sometimes has, you know, he's shown flashes, but he's still a young kid figuring it out. The question that I have, and I've written about it a couple times at Big Blue View, so I'm going to ask you to weigh in on it first. The trade deadline is Tuesday. What is your feeling? What are your thoughts on how Joe Sheen should look at this trade deadline? Should he go all in to help this team this year, or should he have some patience?
So I definitely don't want him to go all in on helping this team this year. I'd love to see the Giants make a move, because I think the team might get pretty frustrated in the second half if the passing offense remains the way it is with so few options available. So I'd love him to add someone, but I think the conditions have to be very right. So to me, the right conditions are you're not going to trade for a veteran receiver who's pretty far along in his career. So to me, that eliminates someone like Brandon Cooks. I don't want someone who's going to be turning 30 soon. If you can get someone relatively young, someone still on a rookie contract, then that's what you go for. And then the question is, what do you give up in order to do that? And the way I have started to think about it is, first of all, I don't want a first round pick going. I don't want a second round pick going to another team. I want the Giants to hold on to those. Then after the second round, then it becomes interesting. And the way I have started to think about it is, okay, who would you have traded Kadarius Toney for straight up among receivers that are out there? Would you have made a straight up deal for Jerry Jeudy? Send Kadarius Toney to Denver for Jerry Jeudy. I think the way things have evolved with Toney, despite his immense potential, which may be realized in Kansas City, I would have taken, I think, Jerry Jeudy for Kadarius Toney straight up, the way things have gone. So if I would have done that, then I would be willing to give up that third round comp pick that Kansas City gave the Giants for Toney. I'd be willing to give that up for a receiver like Jeudy. Now, I don't think Denver will do that. And so I don't expect that to happen. I think Denver will want much more than that. But that's the kind of level of thing that I would be willing to do. Chase Claypool is not a guy that thrills me necessarily. But again, if you could get him for something like a fourth round pick and so on, you know, then you do it. And I think so to me, if I'm Joe Sheen, I'm out there looking, I'm listening to offers. I may be making some offers myself, but I'd be willing to stand pat and not do anything if I don't get an offer that I like. I'm not desperate to make this playoff run this year.
Absolutely. I think you and I see this the same way. And I see the Kadarius Toney trade as a little bit of a tipping point, I guess, because it gives the Giants the 2 third-round picks. And it gives the Giants, for me, it gives them the option of using one of those third round picks to make a move. But as you said, and as I've written at Big Blue View a number of times, it cannot be a short-sighted 2022 move. It has to be a move with the long-term in mind. Maybe a move that, yes, it might help the Giants in 2022, but it has to be a move for a younger player who's got some time left on his contract. DJ Moore, I've mentioned, I don't think the Giants can get DJ Moore for a third round pick. I don't think they can get Jerry Jeudy or probably Chase Claypool for a third round pick. But if they could, you put that on the table and you say, I'll give you one of my threes plus, you know, maybe a day three pick and see if somebody will bite on that. If that's not good enough, it's not good enough, and you just move on. Mm-hmm. If you can get another of these guys that's maybe more of an incremental upgrade, a guy that hasn't gotten a full shot where he is right now, and the guys that I'm thinking about are Terrace Marshall of Carolina or Denzel Mims of the Jets, if you can get one of those guys for a sixth or a seventh round pick, and remember that the Giants are going to have compensatory picks in round 6 and 7 for, I believe it's for the loss of Lorenzo Carter and Keon Crossan. So they have an extra pick or two to play with at the end of day 3. So if you can get a guy on a rookie contract who might be an incremental upgrade, who you can simply look at as a flyer, who might help you, might be a better player than David Sills or Marcus Johnson, you take that shot. Otherwise, you don't mortgage frontline future assets. You don't take on a player who's aging beyond his primary productive seasons. Brandon Cooks is the name you mentioned, and I'm just not big on acquiring Brandon Cooks, especially since I think he's owed $31 million total in 2023 and 24, and I just don't want to go anywhere near that. But so I do think overall, I think we see this one the same way. Tony, last topic for you. I keep asking when we do these SB Nation React polls, I keep asking about expectations and whether expectations are raised for the Giants and how many wins people would be satisfied with. At this point, not necessarily how many wins do you see, but what do you expect over the second half of the season? And what would satisfy you? What would make you happy, you know, watching the Giants over the final nine games?
So I think at the beginning of the season, as I said, I think I predicted 7 wins, and I thought I'd be happy to see 7-10 coming out of this season as a sign that they were starting to make a little progress. You know, once you've got 6 in the bag and you've got 9 games left, then I think, well, 1 out of the last 9 would I think disappoint me. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
just a little.
So my expectations have been raised. On the other hand, second half of their schedule actually is pretty difficult. The fact is that Philadelphia is playing absolutely great, and no one has really come that close to defeating them. And those two games are going to be very difficult for the Giants to win. They're division games, and so anything is possible, but Philadelphia looks like a really, really tough team. They've got 2 of those. Playing at Dallas on Thanksgiving is a tough assignment as well. Right. And so, you know, you've got a few games there that are going to be tough. Minnesota's looking like a tough assignment. They're another team that I think is exceeding expectations this year. I'm still not sure exactly how they're doing it, and I haven't really, you know, watched much of their games. But going to Minnesota, I think that one is on Christmas Eve, if I remember correctly, is a tough game also. So what it comes down to, you know, they've got Houston after the break. They've got to win that game. I think that's probably the worst team that they will see all season. They have to win that game at home. Detroit looks like a terrible team, except that they have this pretty amazing offense. Detroit scores points on almost everybody, you know, even though Jared Goff is quarterbacking them. And I think it's because they have a great offensive line. I think that has a lot to do with it in a good running game. But so I'd like to see the Giants pick up those 2. And then you've got to find a couple more wins between the 2 Washington games and the Indianapolis game, you know, and if they can come out with 4 victories in the last half of the season and wind up, let's say, 10-7, I'll be thrilled to see that as a result.
Yeah. Again, I think we agree. I said at the beginning of the year, when people tried to pin me down on what would be a successful season, I never really wanted to put a number on it, but what I kind of kept coming back to was break that string of double-digit loss seasons. And I still think that, in a way, obviously expectations have been raised. But if this team gets to 9 wins, to 10 wins, whether that's good enough to make the playoffs or not, I think that when you take the 30,000-foot view, When you look at it, in a lot of ways, the season's already a success, because I think we're finding a coaching staff that you can trust. I think we're finding a front office that knows what it's doing. I think we're finding some young players who get it, who get what it takes to win and how to work and how to be professionals. Guys that you can go forward with. So in some ways, it's already been a success. I'd love to see more in the second half of the season from a guy like Wandale Robinson. I would love to see the Giants develop some other ways to get big plays on offense. I don't think we've seen what Wandale Robinson can fully do yet. It would be great if they were able to add any sort of help at wide receiver that would be, as I've said, even an incremental upgrade from Marcus Johnson and David Sills and Richie James. And I can't put a number on it, Tony. Maybe it's 10. Like, you obviously just don't want to see this team fall apart in the second half of the season. But shoot, from as I said, from the 30,000 foot view, if they can get to 10 wins, that's a great season for a team just starting out in a new era of football.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is that I'm sure they're going to be losing some games in the second half of the season, I say, because they have a few really difficult opponents to play. What you want to see is them not getting blown out in those games against better opponents. You want to see them being competitive against good competition, and they were in the first half of the season. I just think that the degree of difficulty is a little higher with a couple of the teams they're going to be facing in the second half of the season. And so you want to see that they can actually compete with those teams, even if they wind up, let's say, in the end, losing by two touchdowns the way they did yesterday. The other thing that I'm looking for is development. Okay. And you know, they're in a bad way now with injuries. They've had so many people injured. But for example, I think about the offensive line. Okay. And at some point, Evan Neal's going to be back. At some point, we hope Ben Bredesen's going to be back. I'm interested to see how much Nick Gates can actually make it back now that he's gotten back into the lineup. Can he actually be a viable option to get a significant number of snaps in a game? And what about these other guys like Jack Anderson that I saw on the field yesterday? Can they get a decent snaps? Can Azudu improve and become a real option there? And by the way, Matt Pert now is I believe has been
cleared to practice. Yes.
Cleared to practice. Okay. And so what can this coaching staff do with Pert? Pert was a guy who in his rookie year looked like he was going to be good. Pert gave Chase Young all he could handle as a rookie in a couple of games there. And then all of a sudden last year, he just fell off the face of the earth, it seemed. And what would he do under Bobby Johnson? Is he somebody who can actually become a productive option at tackle for depth? And if you get positive answers to some of those questions, then all of a sudden the Giants offensive line situation is actually looking pretty good for the future when it looked so dire before the draft. And so I'd like to see whether it looks like they're building strength in some of these areas where they actually might already have people under contract who might help them if they can come back and perform.
Absolutely, Tony. And so 9 games to go for the Giants, bye week this week. So guys, I know you all will have your honey-do lists this week. Make sure that you get all of that taken care of this weekend. Get all the yard work done. Get all the chores done. Get everything done this weekend so you're ready to rock and roll and ready to watch some football when the Giants get back to action in Week 10. So, Giants fans, that's our show for today. Thank you, as always, for listening. Please take care of each other. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.